Osho, The Book of Wisdom, Volume 1, Discourses on Atisha's 7 Points of Mind Training, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse Number 3.
The first question. Bhagwan, why don't I trust you? Prem Pragita, trust is possible only if first you trust in yourself. The most fundamental thing has to happen within you first. If you trust in yourself, you can trust in me. You can trust in people. You can trust in existence. But if you don't trust in yourself, then no other trust is ever possible. And the society destroys the trust in the very roots. It does not allow you to trust yourself. It teaches all other kinds of trust. Trust in the parents, trust in the church, trust in the state, trust in God, and ad infinitum. But the basic trust is completely destroyed. And then all other trusts are phony, are bound to be phony. Then all other trusts are just plastic flowers. You don't have real roots for real flowers to grow. The society does it deliberately, on purpose. Because a man who trusts in himself is dangerous for a society. For a society that depends on slavery. For a society that has invested too much in slavery. A man trusting himself is an independent man. You cannot be predictable about him. He will move in his own way. Freedom will be his life. He will trust when he feels, when he loves, and then his trust will have a tremendous intensity and truth in it. Then his trust will be alive and authentic, and he will be ready to risk all for his trust. But only when he feels, only when it is true, only when it stirs his heart, only when it stirs his intelligence, his love, otherwise not. You cannot force him into any kind of believing. And this society depends on belief. Its whole structure is that of auto-hypnosis. Its whole structure is based in creating robots, machines, not men. It needs dependent people, so much so that they are constantly in need of being tyrannized. So much so that they are searching and seeking their own tyrants, their own Adolf Hitlers, their own Mussolinis, their own Joseph Stalins, Mao Zedongs. This earth, this beautiful earth, we have turned into a great prison. Few power-lusty people have reduced the whole humanity into a mob. Man is allowed to exist only if he compromises with all kinds of nonsense. Now, to tell to a child to believe in God is nonsense. Utter nonsense. Not that God does not exist, but because the child has yet not felt the thirst, the desire, the longing, he is yet not ready to go in search for the truth, the ultimate truth of life. He is not yet mature enough to inquire into the reality of God. That love affair has to happen someday. But it can happen only if no belief is imposed upon him. If he is converted before the thirst has arisen to explore and to know, then his whole life he will live in a phony way. He will live in a pseudo way. Yes, he will talk about God because he has been told that God is. And he has been told authoritatively. And he has been told by people who were very powerful in his childhood, the parents, the priest, the teachers. He has been told by people that he had to accept it. It was a question of his survival. He could not say no to his parents, because without them, he would not be able to live at all. It was too risky to say no. He had to say yes. But his yes can't be true. How it can be true? He is saying yes only as a political device to survive. You have not turned him into a religious person. You have made him a diplomat. You have created a politician. You have sabotaged his potential to grow into an authentic being. You have poisoned him. You have destroyed the very possibility of his intelligence, because intelligence arises only when longing arises to know. Now the longing will never arise, because before the question has taken possession of his soul, the answer has already been supplied. Before he was hungry, the food has been forced into his being. Now without hunger, this forced food cannot be digested. There is no hunger to digest it. That's why people live like pipes. through whom life passes like undigested food. One has to be very patient with children, very alert, very conscious, not to say anything that may hinder their own intelligence to arrive, not to convert them into Christians, Hindus, and Mohammedans. One needs infinite patience. One day, that miracle happens. When the child himself starts inquiring, then too, don't supply him ready-made answers. Ready-made answers help nobody. Ready-made answers are dull, stupid. Help him to become more intelligent. Rather than giving him answers, give him situations, challenges, so that his intelligence is sharpened, that he asks more deeply, that the question penetrates to his very core, that the question becomes a question of life and death. But that is not allowed. Parents are very much afraid. The society is very much afraid. If the children are allowed to remain free, who knows? They may never come to the fold the parents belong. They may never go to the church, Catholic, Protestant, this or that. Who knows what is going to happen when they become intelligent on their own? They will not be within our control. And this society is in deep and deep politics to control everybody, to possess everybody's soul. That's why the first thing we have to do is to destroy the trust of the child in himself, the confidence of the child in himself. We have to make him shaky, afraid. Once he is trembling, he is controllable. If he is confident, he is uncontrollable. If he is confident of himself, he will assert. He will try to do his thing. He will never like to do anybody else's thing. He will go on his own journey. He will not fulfill somebody else's desires for some trip. He will never be an imitator. He will never be a dull and dead person. He will be so alive, so pulsating with life, that nobody can control him. Destroy his trust, and you have castrated him. You have taken his powers. He will always be now powerless, and always be in need of somebody to dominate, direct commands. Now he will be a good soldier, a good citizen, a good nationalist, a good Christian, a good Mohammedan, a good Hindu. Yes, he will be all these things, but he will not be a real individual. He will not have any roots. He will be uprooted his whole life. He will live without roots, and to live without roots is to live in misery, is to live in hell. Just as trees needs roots in the earth, man is also a tree and needs roots in existence. He will live a very unintelligent life. He may succeed in the world. He may become very famous. Just the other day, I was reading a story. Three surgeons, old friends, had met on a holiday. On the beach, sitting under the sun, they started boasting. The first said, "I have come across a man who had lost both of his legs in the war. I have given him artificial legs, but it has been a miracle. Now, he has become one of the greatest runners in the world. There is every possibility in the next coming Olympic. He is going to top." The other said, "That's nothing. I had come across a woman who fell from 30-storied building, her face completely crushed. I had done a great job of plastic surgery. Now, just the other day, I have come to know through the newspapers that she has become the world beauty." The third was a humble man. The both looked at him and asked, "What have you done lately? What is new?" The man said, "Nothing much. Moreover, I'm not allowed to say anything about it." Both the colleagues became more curious. They said, "But we are friends. We can keep your secrets. You need not be worried. It will not leak out." So he said, "Okay, if you say, if you promise." A man was brought to me in a car accident. He lost his head. I was at a loss what to do. I rushed into my garden just to think what to do. And suddenly I came across a cabbage. Finding nothing else, I transplanted the cabbage instead of the head. And do you know what? That man had gone, has become the Prime Minister of India. You can destroy the child, still he can become the Prime Minister of India. There is no inherent impossibility of becoming successful without intelligence. In fact, it is more difficult to become successful with intelligence. because the intelligent person is inventive. He is always ahead of his time. It takes time to understand him. The unintelligent person is easily understood. He fits with the gestalt of the society. The society has values, criterions to judge him. It takes years for the society to evaluate a genius. So I am not saying that a person who has no intelligence cannot become successful, cannot become famous, but still he will remain phony. And that is the misery. You can become famous, but if you are phony, you live in misery. You don't know what blessings life is showering on you. You will never know. You have not intelligence enough to know. You will never see the beauty of existence because you don't have the sensitivity to know it. You will never see the seer miracle that surrounds you in millions of ways that crosses your path every day. You will never see it, because to see it you need a tremendous capacity to understand, to feel, to be. This society is a power-oriented society. This society is still utterly primitive, utterly barbarous. Few people, politicians, the priests, the professors, few people are dominating millions. And this society is run in such a way that no child is allowed to have intelligence. It is a sheer accident that once in a while a Buddha arrives on the earth. Sheer accident. Somehow, once in a while, a person escapes from the clutches of the society. Once in a while, a person remains unpoisoned by the society. That must be because of some error, some mistake by the society. Otherwise, the society succeeds in destroying your roots, in destroying your trust in yourself. And once that is done, you will never be able to trust anybody. Once you are incapable of loving yourself, you will never be able to love anybody. That is an absolute truth. There are no exceptions to it. You can love others only if you are able to love yourself. But the society condemns self-love. It says it is selfishness. It says it is narcissistic. Yes, self-love can become narcissistic, but it is not necessarily so. It can become narcissistic if it never moves beyond itself. It can become a kind of selfishness if it becomes confined to yourself. Otherwise, self-love is the beginning of all other loves. A person who loves himself, sooner or later, starts overflowing with love. A person who trusts himself cannot distrust anybody, even those who are going to deceive him, even those who have already deceived him. Yes, he cannot even distrust them, because now he knows trust is far more valuable than anything else. You can cheat a person, but what can you cheat? You can take some money from him or something else. But the man who knows the beauty of trust will not be distracted by these small things. He will still love you, he will still trust you. And then a miracle happens. If a man really trusts you, it is impossible to cheat him. Almost impossible. It happens every day in your life too. Whenever you trust somebody, it becomes impossible for him to cheat you, to deceive you. Sitting on a railway station on the platform, and you don't know the person who is sitting by your side, a stranger, a complete stranger, and you tell him, "Just look at my luggage. I have to go to purchase the ticket. Please just take care of the luggage." And you go. You trusted an absolute stranger. But it almost never happens that the stranger deceives. He could have deceived you if you had not trusted him. Trust has a magic in it. How can he deceive you now that you have trusted him? How can he fall so low? He will never be able to forgive himself if he deceives you. There is an intrinsic quality in human consciousness to trust and to be trusted, and everybody enjoys to be trusted. It is respect from the other side. And when you trust the stranger, it is more so. There was no reason to trust, and still you trusted. You raised the man to such a high pedestal. You valued the man so much. It is almost impossible for him to fall from that height. And if he falls, he will never be able to forgive himself. He will have to carry the weight of guilt his whole life. A man who trusts himself comes to know the beauty of it. Comes to know that the more you trust yourself, the more you bloom. The more you are in a state of let go, relaxation. The more you are settled and serene. The more you are calm, cool, and quiet. And it is so beautiful that you start trusting more and more people. Because the more you trust, the more your calmness deepens. Your coolness goes deeper and deeper to the very core of your being. And the more you trust, the more you soar high. A man who can trust will sooner or later know the logic of trust. And then one day he is bound to try to trust the unknown. It is only when you can trust the unknown that you can trust a master, never before it. Because the master represents nothing but the unknown. He represents the uncharted. He represents the infinite, the unbounded. He represents the oceanic. He represents the wild. He represents God. Pragita, you say, why don't I trust you? It is simple. You don't trust yourself. Start trusting yourself. That is the fundamental lesson. The first lesson. Start loving yourself. If you don't love yourself, who else is going to love you? But remember, if you only love yourself, your love will be very poor. A great Jewish mystic, Hillel, has said, if you are not for yourself, who is going to be for yourself? And also, if you are only for yourself, then what meaning your life can ever have? A tremendously significant statement. Remember it. Love yourself, because if you don't love yourself, nobody else will ever be able to love you. You cannot love a person who hates himself. And on this unfortunate earth, almost everybody hates himself. Everybody condemns himself. How can you love a person who is condemnatory towards himself? He will not believe you. He cannot love himself. How you dare? He cannot love himself. How you can love? He will suspect some game, some trick, some trip. He will suspect that you must be after something else. He will suspect that you are trying to deceive him in the name of love. He will be very cautious, alert. And his suspicion will poison your being. And if you love a person who hates himself, you are trying to destroy his concept about himself, and nobody easily drops his concept about himself. That is his identity. He will fight with you. He will prove to you that he is right and you are wrong. That's what is happening in every love relationship. Let me call it, in every so-called love relationship. It is happening between every husband and wife, every lover and the beloved, every man and every woman. How can you destroy the other's concept about himself? That is his identity. That is his ego. That's how he knows himself. If you take it away, he will not know who he is. It is too risky. he cannot drop his concept so easily. He will prove to you that he is not worth loving. He is only worth hating. And the same is case with you. You also hate yourself. You cannot allow anybody else to love you. Whenever somebody comes with a loving energy around you, you shrink. You want to escape. You are afraid. You know perfectly well that you are unworthy of love. You know that only on the surface you look so good, so beautiful. Deep down you are ugly. And if you allow this person to love you, sooner or later, and it is going to be sooner than later, he will come to know who you are in reality. How long you will be able to pretend with a person with whom you have to live in love? You can pretend in the marketplace, in the Lions Club, in the Rotary Club. You can pretend. Smiles, all smiles. You can have a beautiful acting, role playing. But if you live with a woman or a man for 24 hours, then it is tiring to go on smiling and smiling and smiling. Then the smile tires because it is phony. It is just an exercise of the lips. And the lips become tired. How can you go on being sweet? Your bitterness will surface. Hence, by the time the honeymoon is over, everything is over. Both have known each other's reality. Both have known each other's phoniness. Both have known each other's falsity. One is afraid to become intimate. To be intimate means you will have to put aside the role. And you know who you are. Worthless. Just dirt. That's what you have been told from the very beginning. Your parents, your teachers, your priests, your politicians, all have been telling you that you are dirt, worthless. Nobody has ever accepted you. Nobody has given you the feeling that you are loved, respected, that you are needed, that this existence will miss you, that without you this existence will not be the same, that without you there will be a hole, that without you this universe is going to lose some poetry, some beauty. A song will be missed, a note will be missed. There will be a gap. Nobody has told you that. And that's what my work here is. To destroy the distrust that has been created in you about yourself. To destroy all condemnation that has been imposed on you. To take it away from you and to give you a feeling that you are loved, respected, loved by existence. God has created you because He loved you. He loved you so much that He could not resist the temptation of creating you. When a painter paints, he paints because he loves. Vincent van Gogh continuously painted the sun his whole life. He loved the sun so much. In fact, It was the sun that drove him mad. For 1 year continuously, under the hot sun, he was standing and painting. His whole life revolved around the sun. And the day he was content to paint, the painting that he always wanted to paint, and to paint this painting, he has painted many paintings, but he was not contented. The day he was contented, the day he could say yes, this is the thing that I wanted to paint, he committed suicide, because he said, my work is done. I have done the thing that I had come for. My destiny is fulfilled. Now it is pointless to live. His whole life, a devotion for a certain painting, he must have been madly in love with the sun. He looked at the sun so long that it destroyed his eyes, his vision. It drove him mad. When a poet composes a song, it is because he loves it. God has painted you, sung you, danced you. God loves you. If you don't see any meaning in the word God, don't be worried. Call it existence. Call it the whole. The existence loves you. Otherwise, you would not be here. Relax into your being. You are cherished by the whole. That's why the whole goes on breathing in you, pulsating in you. Once you start feeling this tremendous respect and love and trust of the whole in you, you will start growing roots into your being. You will trust yourself, and only then you can trust me. And only then you can trust your friends, your children, your husband, your wife. Only then you can trust the trees and the animals and the stars and the moon. Then simply one lives as trust. It is no more a question of trusting this or that. One simply trusts. And to trust simply is to be religious. That's what sannyas is all about. Sannyas is to undo all that the society has done. It is not just accidental that the priests are against me, the politicians are against me, the parents are against me, the whole establishment is against me. It is not accidental. I can understand the absolutely clear logic of it. I am trying to undo what they have done. I am sabotaging the whole pattern of this slave society. My effort is to create rebels. And the beginning of the rebel is to trust in oneself. If I can help you to trust in yourself, I have helped you. Nothing else is needed. Everything else follows on its own accord. The second question, Bhagwan, John Lilly has said, what the mind believes is true or becomes true. Would you please comment on this? Sambuddho, that's what has been happening down the ages. That is the way of auto-hypnosis. John Lilly is absolutely wrong. What the mind believes, he says, is true. It is not. It only appears true. And he says, or it becomes true. It never becomes true by believing. But it starts appearing true. Yes, for the believer, it becomes true. Although it is not true. Because belief begins in ignorance. Belief cannot create truth. Truth is already the case. Remember Atisa, the first preliminary. Truth is. You need not believe in it for it to be. Your belief or your disbelief are not going to make any difference in the truth. The truth is truth whether you believe or you disbelieve. But if you believe in something, it starts appearing to you at least as true. That's what is the meaning of belief is. Belief means to believe in something as true. You know that you don't know. You know that the truth is unknown to you. In your ignorance, you start believing because belief is cheap. To discover truth is arduous. It needs a long pilgrimage. It needs a great emptying of the mind. It needs a great cleansing of the heart. It needs a certain innocence, a rebirth. You have to become a child again. It is only very few people who have ever dared to discover truth. And it is risky because it may not console you. It has no obligation to console you. It is risky. It may shatter all that you have known before. And you will have to rearrange your whole life. It is dangerous. It may destroy all your illusions. It may shatter all your dreams. It is really going through fires. It is going to burn you as you are. It is going to kill you as you are. And who knows what will happen later on? How can the seed know that by dying in the soil, it will become a great tree? It will not be there to witness the happening. How can the seed know that one day, if he dies, there will be great foliage, green leaves, great branches, and flowers and fruits? How the seed can know? The seed will not be there. The seed has to disappear before it can happen. The seed has never met the tree. The seed has to disappear, die. Only very few people have that much courage. It really needs guts to discover truth. You will die as yourself. You will be certainly born. But how can you be convinced of it? What guarantee is there? There is no guarantee. Hence, unless you are with a master who has died and is reborn, who has crucified himself and is resurrected, unless you come across a man like Christ or Buddha or Atisa, you will not be able to gather courage enough. Seeing Atisa, something may start stirring in your heart. A chord may be touched. Something may be triggered. A synchronicity. The presence of somebody who has arrived may bring a great longing in you, may become the birth of an intense, passionate search for truth. Belief cannot give you the truth. It only pretends. It is cheap. It is a plastic flower. You need not take all the trouble of growing a rose bush. You can simply go to the market and purchase plastic flowers, and they are more lasting too. In fact, they are almost eternal. Once in a while you can wash them and they are again fresh. They will not deceive you, but at least they can deceive the neighbors, and that is the point. You will know all along that they are plastic flowers. How can you forget it? You have purchased them. Neighbors may be deceived, but how can you be deceived? And I don't think that even the neighbors are deceived, because they have also purchased plastic flowers. They know they are deceiving you. They know you are deceiving them. Everybody is perfectly aware that everybody else is deceiving. But this is how life is, people say. Nobody is really deceived. People even pretend to be deceived. You pretend that you have real flowers, others pretend that we are deceived. Just watch, observe. And what I am saying will be experienced by you. It is simple fact. I am not talking philosophy. Just stating facts. What John Lilly says is utter nonsense. He says what the mind believes is true. It is never true, because belief has nothing to do with truth. You can believe that this is night. By your believing, this is not going to become night. But you can believe and you can close your eyes, and for you it is night. But only for you, remember, not in truth. you are living in a kind of hallucination. This danger is there in belief. It makes you feel that you know the truth. And because it makes you feel that you know the truth, this becomes the greatest barrier in the search. Believe or disbelieve, you are blocked. Because disbelief is also nothing but belief in a negative way. The Catholic believes in God, the communist believes in no God. Both are believers. Go to Kaaba or go to Comintern. Go to Kailas or go to Kremlin. It is all the same. The believer believes it is so, the non-believer believes it is not so. And because both have settled already, without taking any trouble into going to discover, the deeper is their belief, the stronger is their belief, the greater is the barriers. They will never go on a pilgrimage. There is no point. They will live surrounded by their own illusion, self-created, self-sustained. It may be consoling, but it is not liberating. Millions of people are wasting their life with belief and disbelief. The inquiry into truth begins only when you drop all believing. You say, I would like to encounter the truth on my own. I will not believe in Christ and I will not believe in Buddha. I would like to become a Christ or a Buddha myself. I would like to be a light unto myself. Why should one be a Christian? It is ugly. Be a Christ if you can be, but don't be a Christian. Be a Buddha if you have any respect for yourself, but don't be a Buddhist. Buddhist believes, Buddha knows. When you can know, when knowing is possible, why settle on believing? But again, the society would like you to believe. Because believers are good people, obedient, law-abiding. They follow all formalities, the etiquette. They are never troublemakers. They simply follow the crowd, whichever crowd they happen to be in. They simply go with the crowd. They are not real men, they are sheep. The humanity has not yet arrived. Somebody said to Jas Bernard Shaw once, what do you think about civilization? He said, it is a good idea. Somebody has to try it. It has not yet been tried. Humanity is still arriving. We are still groping between animality and humanity. We are in a limbo. The man has to be born. The man has to be given birth. We have to prepare the ground for the man to appear. And the most significant thing that will help for the man to come will be if we can drop believing, if we can drop being Christians, Hindus, Mohammedans, Jainas, Buddhists, Communists. If we can drop believing, immediately your energy will take a new turn. It will start inquiring. And to inquire is beautiful. Your life will become a pilgrimage to truth. And in that very pilgrimage, you grow. Growth is a byproduct of the inquiry into truth. Believers never grow. They remain childish. And remember, to be childlike and to be childish are poles apart. They are not the same thing. It is beautiful to be childlike. The man of trust is childlike and the man of belief is childish. To be childlike is the ultimate in growth. That is the very culmination. Consciousness has come to the ultimate peak. To be childlike means to be a sage. And to be childish means just ungrown up. The average mental age of human beings on the earth today is not more than 12 years. When for the first time this was discovered, it was such a shock. Nobody has ever thought about it. It was just by an accident that it became known. In the First World War, for the first time in human history, the people who were candidates who wanted to enter in the army, they were examined. Their mental age was inquired into. Their IQ was determined. This was a great revelation that they were not more than 12 years. Average age was just 12 years. This is childishness. The body goes on growing and the mind has stopped at the age of 12. What kind of humanity we have created on this earth? Why the mind stops at 12? Because by the time one is 12, one has gathered all kind of beliefs. One is already a believer. One already knows what truth is. One is a Christian, another is a communist. One believes in God, one does not believe in God. One believes in the Bible, and the other believes in Das Kapital. One believes in the Bhagavad Gita, another believes in the Red Book of Mao Zedong. We have drilled concepts, ideologies into the innocent minds of the poor children. They are already becoming knowers. Do you know, by the age a child is 7, he already knows 50% of all that he will ever know. And by the time he is 14, he has almost arrived. Now there is nowhere to go. He has only to vegetate. Now he will exist as a cabbage. If he goes to the college, then as they say, he may become a cauliflower. A cabbage with college education is a cauliflower. But not much difference. Just labels change. The cabbage becomes MA, PhD, this and that. And just to show respect, we call it cauliflower. But the mental age is 12. The real man grows to the very end. Even while he is dying, he is growing. Even the last moment of his life will still be an inquiry, a search, a learning. He will still be inquiring, now inquiring into death. He will be fascinated. Death is such an unknown phenomenon, such a mystery, far more mysterious than life itself. How can an intelligent man be afraid? If he has not been afraid in life to go into the uncharted and in the unknown, at the moment of death, he will be thrilled, ecstatic. Now the last moment has come. He will be entering into the darkness, the dark tunnel of death. This is the greatest adventure one can ever go on. He will be learning. A real man never believes he learns. A real man never becomes knowledgeable. He always remains open. Open to truth. And he always remembers that it is not the truth that has to adjust with me, but just the vice versa. I am to adjust with truth. And the believer tries to adjust the truth to himself. The seeker adjusts himself to truth. Remember the difference. The difference is tremendous. One who believes, he says, truth should be like this. This is my belief. Just think of a Christian. If God appears not like Jesus Christ, but like Krishna, not on the cross, but with a flute. Girlfriends dancing around him. The Christian will close his eyes. He will say, this is not my cup of tea. Girlfriends? Can you think of Jesus with girlfriends? Cross and girlfriends can't go together. Jesus hanging on the cross and girlfriends dancing? It won't fit. It will be very bizarre. He was waiting for Christ to appear. And instead of Christ appears this Gaya Krishna. He seems to be a debauch. And the flute, and the world is suffering, and the people are hungry, and they need bread. And this man is playing on the flute. Seems to be utterly uncompassionate. Seems to be indulgent. The Christian cannot believe in Krishna. If God appears as Krishna, then the Christian will say, this is not God. And the same will be the case with the Hindu who was waiting for Krishna. If Christ appears, that will not be his idea of God. So sad. Such a long face. So gloomy. With such suffering on his face. Christians say Jesus never laughed. I don't think they are right. And I don't think that they represent the real Christ. But that's what they have managed to propagate. The Hindu cannot accept the revelation. He must think this is some kind of nightmare. Jesus will not appeal him. The believer cannot trust his own experience even. Even if truth is revealed, he will reject it unless it fits with himself. He is more important than truth itself. The truth has an obligation to fit with him. He is the criterion. He is the decisive factor. This kind of man can never know truth. He is already prejudiced, poisoned. The man who wants to know the truth has to be capable of dropping all concepts about truth. All about truth has to be dropped. Only then you can know truth. Know well. To know about truth is not to know truth. Whatsoever you know may be utter nonsense. There is every possibility it is utter nonsense. In fact, people can be conditioned to believe any kind of nonsense. They have been convinced. Once I went to address a conference of theosophists. Now, theosophists are the people who can believe any bullshit, any. The more city it is, the more believable. So I just played a joke on them. I simply invented a society called Sitnalta. They were all dozing, they became alert. sit in altar? I made the word by just reading Atlantis backwards. And then I told them that this knowledge comes from Atlantis, the continent that has disappeared in the Atlantic Ocean. And then I talked about that really they are not seven chakras but 17. That great ancient esoteric knowledge is lost. But it's still a society of enlightened masters exists. It still works. It is a very, very esoteric society. Very few people are allowed to have any contact with it. Its knowledge is kept utterly secret. And I talked all kinds of nonsense that I could manage. And then the president of the society said that I have heard about this society. Now it was my turn to be surprised. And he said, whatsoever I have said, is for the first time that the knowledge of this secret society has been revealed so exactly. And then letters started coming to me. And one man even wrote that I thank you very much that you introduced this inner esoteric circle to the Theosophists because I am a member of the society. And I can vouch that whatsoever you have said is absolutely true. These people are there who are just waiting to believe into anything. Because belief, and the more nonsensical it is, the more important it appears to be. The more absurd it is, the more believable. Because if something is logical, then there is no question of believing in it. You don't believe in the sun. You don't believe in the moon. You don't believe in the theory of relativity. Either you understand it or you don't understand it. There is no question of belief. You don't believe in gravitation. There is no need. Nobody believes in a scientific theory. It is logical. Belief is needed only when something illogical, something utterly absurd is propounded. Tertullian has said that I believe in God because it is absurd. Credo qua absurdum. My creed is the absurd. All beliefs are absurd. If a belief is very logical, it will not create belief in you. So people go on inventing things. Man is basically a coward. He does not want to inquire. And he does not want to say that I don't know either. Now that president of the Theosophical Society who said that I have heard about this society, he cannot say that he does not know. Even that much courage is not there. To accept one's ignorance needs courage. To accept that I don't know is the beginning of real knowledge. You go on believing because there are holes in your life which have to be filled. And belief is easily available. There are 300 religions on the earth. One truth and 300 religions. One God and 300 religions. One existence and 300 religions. And I'm not talking about the sects, because each religion has dozens of sects. And then there are subsects to sects. And it goes on and on. If you count all the sects and all the subsects, then it will be 3,000 or even more. How can so many beliefs contradictory to each other can go on? People have a certain need. The need is not to appear ignorant. How to manage this need? Gather few beliefs. And the more absurd the belief is, the more knowledgeable you appear. Because nobody else knows about it. There are people who believe in the hollow earth. That inside the earth, there is a civilization. Now if somebody says it, you cannot deny it. You cannot accept it. But at least you have to listen attentively. And that serves a purpose. Everybody wants to be listened attentively. And one thing is certain, that this man knows more than you. You don't know whether the earth is hollow or not. This man knows. And who knows, he may be right. And he can gather 1,001 proofs. He can argue for it. He can propound it in such a way that you have at least to be silent if you don't agree. Believers and believers and believers. But where is truth? So many believers, where is truth? If John Lilly is right, then the world will be full of truth. You will come across everywhere. Everybody will be having truth because everybody is a believer. No, it is all nonsense. He says, what the mind believes is true or becomes true. No. What the mind believes is never true. Because truth needs no belief. And belief is a barrier to truth. And what the mind believes never becomes true, because truth is not a becoming. Truth is a being. It is already the case. You have to see it. Or you can go on avoiding seeing it. But it is there. Nothing has to be added to it. It is eternally there. And the best way to avoid truth is to believe. Then you need not look at it. Your eyes become full of belief. Belief functions as a dust on the eyes. You become closed into yourself. The belief becomes a prison around you. Belief closes you. Then you are living within yourself in a windowless existence. And you can go on believing whatsoever you want to believe. But remember, it is belief, and belief is a lie. Let me say that even when truth is told to you, don't believe in it. Explore, inquire, search, experiment, experience. Don't believe in it. Even when truth is conveyed to you, if you believe in it, you turn it into a lie. A truth believed is a lie. Belief turns truth into a lie. Believe in Buddha and you believe in a lie. Believe in Christ and you believe in a lie. Don't believe in Christ, don't believe in Buddha, don't believe in me. What I say, listen attentively, intelligently, experiment, experience. And when you have experience, will you need to believe in it? There will be no doubt left. So what will be the point of belief? Belief is a way of repressing doubt. You doubt, hence you need belief. The rock of belief represses the spring of doubt. When you know, you know. You know it is so. There is no doubt left. Your experience has expelled all darkness and all doubt. Truth is, you are full of it. Truth never creates belief. How to attain to truth? By dropping all kinds of belief. And remember, I am saying all kinds. Belief in me is included. Experience me. Come along with me. Let me share what I have seen. But don't believe, don't be in a hurry. Don't say that now, what is the point? When Bhagwan has seen, now all that is left for me is to believe. What I have seen cannot become your experience unless you see it. And it is the experience of truth that delivers you from ignorance, from bondage, from misery. It is not the belief that delivers you. It is truth. Jesus says, truth liberates. But how to attain to truth? It is not a question of belief, but a question of meditativeness. And what is meditation? Meditation is emptying your mind completely of all belief, ideology, concept, thought. Only in an empty mind, when there is no dust left on the mirror, truth reflects. That reflection is a benediction. The last question. Bhagwan, thank you so much just for life. All the beautiful methods are no good anymore. I will let mine drop, and the methods too. I fear that you will send me back to hell. Service, methods are never of any use. Methods have never been of any good. But still they serve a purpose. The purpose is negative. You have a thorn in your feet. You need another thorn to pull it out. Once the first thorn is pulled out by the second, don't put the second in the wound back. Just out of gratefulness, throw both. The second thorn is as much a thorn as the first. Their qualities are not different. Because your mind is so much full of rubbish, you need something to pull it out. But whatsoever is going to pull it out is rubbish in its own way. It is the same. Poison is needed to kill poison. Don't cling to the second poison thinking it is medicine. Don't become addicted to the second poison. It is good that you say all the beautiful methods are no good anymore. They were never. Still they serve a purpose. Because man lives in such stupidity, he has to be pulled out of it. And remember, your lies, your beliefs, your ignorance has to be dropped somehow. Some ways and means have to be invented. Once your mind is dropped, you will see the whole ridiculousness of all the methods. Then you will understand they were never needed anymore. But don't start talking it to others, because there are many people who may drop them from the very beginning. Seeing that if they are not needed, then why bother? They are needed, although there comes a time when they have to be dropped. Use them and drop them. All methods are like ladders. When you have crossed the ladder, you have reached on the upper floor, you need not bother about it. It can be thrown. In fact, it should be thrown. To keep it, maybe some unconscious desire in you to go back. To keep the ladder there in case you decide to go back to your old rubbish. The ladder can help in that way too. A ladder is neutral. It can take you to the upper floor. It can bring you down back to the old situation. The ladder cannot direct you. In fact, the moment you have crossed the ladder, you have used it and reached a different plane of life, a different plane of understanding. Throw the ladder away immediately before you start clinging to the ladder. So it is good that you think that methods are no good anymore. I will let mine drop and the methods too. If methods are no more good service, where is the mind? And if the mind is still there to be dropped, then please don't be in a hurry. The methods have still a little function to fulfill. You will not be able to let the mind drop. Who are you except the mind? Who will drop the mind? Who will let the mind drop? You are not yet. You will know yourself only when the mind is dropped. When the mind disappears, you will know who you are. Before that, you don't know. It is just mind thinking to drop mind. Mind is very subtle, very cunning. It can go on playing new games. It can say, yes, it is so beautiful to drop the mind. And it is still the mind. And the mind can say, there is no need for any method, service. You can drop me easily. It is up to you. Mind is playing a very subtle trick. It is helping you to drop the methods first. And then the mind knows, we will see. We will see how you drop me. If really it has been understood that methods are no more useful, it is synonymous to the understanding that mind is dropped. They mean the same thing. To know that methods are no more needful, no more useful, is to see that the mind is no more there. Mind is method. Mind is technique. Mind cannot exist without methods. Methods cannot exist without mind. They go together. They are two aspects of the same energy. And you say, I fear that you will send me back to hell. If really methods are dropped, there is no way to go back to hell. Even if I want to send you, I cannot. Methods are needed to go to hell. Methods are needed to come out of hell. Methods are needed to go into hell. No method is needed to go to heaven. When you are out of hell, you are in heaven. So the whole question is how to be out of hell. Out of hell is heaven. heaven is not some place where you have to go. Otherwise, methods will be needed. Paths and ways will be needed. No paths and no ways are needed. All paths, all ways lead into hell. But if you are in hell, then you will have to use the same paths and the same ways to come back. Let me tell you one of the most beautiful parables that has ever been invented by man, the parable of Adam and Eve eating the fruit of the tree of knowledge. The moment they have eaten the fruit of the tree of knowledge, they fall, the original fall. They are no more in paradise. They are no more deathless. They are no more in eternity. They have lost contact. What has happened? Mind has been created. That is the meaning of the parable. Eating of the tree of knowledge creates mind. The moment they ate the fruit of the tree of knowledge, mind was created. Adam and Eve are still in the same place, in the same space. They have not gone anywhere. But the mind is created. And once the mind is there, paradise is lost, forgotten. One falls asleep and starts dreaming of hells, death, etc., etc. Now you will have to vomit the fruit of knowledge. You will have to vomit the mind out of your system. Once you have vomited knowledge out of your system, suddenly you will be awakened that you are in paradise, and you will start laughing at the whole ridiculousness of it, because you will know, you will become perfectly aware that you have never been gone anywhere else. You have always been here, always and always, just fallen asleep. And there was a nightmare. Now the poison is out of system, the nightmare is finished. We are in the Garden of Eden right now, this very moment. Nobody can send you to hell service except knowledge, except methods, except mind. Try to understand. Rather, being in a hurry of dropping anything, try to understand. Become more aware. Become more alert, more watchful, more observant. And methods will disappear and mind will disappear in the same instant. And then there is no hell. In fact, there has never been. You had only imagined it. It is all paradise and always paradise. We are in God. We are gods. Enough for today.